Hello, everybody. Elon here. We've got a special episode of the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast for you today. Brian and I still recovering from our three-hour patron cast from last week, so we didn't record a show this weekend, but that doesn't mean we want to leave your feed empty, so we've got a really special show today because Derek Dodgson has just given us another episode of the KK Leagues Report. This is a podcast he's been recording for the patrons all throughout the year, interviewing different people playing in our various podcast leagues, and this is a very special episode because he first interviewed Ian, the Kakupfel Ultimate Champion who just won Tier 1, and the Fast Track winner, Alec. That's the first half of the show. Then we're going to take a break, and then after that, you're going to hear Derek interviewing the winners of the Keeping Carlson Dynasty League, the first season Dynasty League winners, Ian, a different Ian, Saqib and Brett, aka the good old Ottawa boy. So there's going to be a ton of really valuable content here from people who have just achieved the highest levels of success. So you definitely are going to enjoy this episode. And then Brian and I will be back next weekend with some playoff breakdowns and whatever off-season stuff we could come up with. Eventually, we'll get to some fun breakdowns of the season, Red Boys, Green Boys episode, where we look at the first half versus second half. And actually, before long, we're going to get to some actual NHL stuff, because once the NHL playoffs are over, then we get the entry draft, then we get free agency and trades. So before long, there's going to be a lot of new content here. But in the meantime, enjoy this episode of the KK Leagues Report, and like I said, make sure you subscribe to Keeping Carlson so you'll get episodes like this, and then everything else we'll have for you throughout the summer. Hope you're doing well. Over to Derek.
Welcome, everyone, to a special episode where we are interviewing today two of the most successful managers in the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League this season. I'm your host, Derek Dodgson, and with me today is, first up, Tier 1 Sweden Ultimate Champion, Ian. Ian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
All right, Ian, one Tier 1 Sweden playoffs with the team Dream Warriors. And we're going to be talking to him as well as another big winner this year. That's the winner of the Fast Track. Total points four of all Kakupfel divisions, all 716 players. The top this year was Alec, competing under the team name Poppy. Alec, thanks for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you both. I think this will be a great opportunity for everyone listening to get some insights and advice from both of you, thoughts on this season, what made you so successful. If we can get started, Alec, maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've got into fantasy hockey and what led you to the Kakupfel for this is your first full season, right?
Yeah, that's right. I was really big into fantasy baseball in high school and university. And last year, my friend was setting up a fantasy hockey league. And so I joined, when I was into fantasy baseball, it was very easy for me to, I got obsessed and was listening to podcasts and stuff like that. So, I was very quick to search for podcasts for fantasy hockey as well. And, so that's how I found the Kakupfel, and, just went from there.
And Ian, you're, a veteran of Kakupfel going back a number of years. That's right.
Yeah, back to the Fantrax days. I don't know how, that was like 6 or 7 years ago. I did a couple seasons over there on that platform.
And what's your road been to get to Tier 1 leading up to this year?
It's kind of an interesting one because I never really fully won before anything. I've just done good enough to keep relegating up bit by bit. Went down 1 year back. I made it to T1. Because of the expansion too, with two extra teams. So a little lucky there.
That's something we've talked about a lot this season, but the expansion of that division up to 16. What was your experience with that sort of, more competition, deeper pool of players rostered?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I thought the ad drop, the players that you could pick up to stream were still pretty similar So I liked it. I mean, I guess I'm biased, but it was good.
It seemed to work out for you at least.
Yeah.
So going back to the beginning of the season, you know, what was, you know, your, I guess, you know, starting with you and your moments or decisions you think that were most impactful in leading to you ending up with this result?
Yeah, there were lots of highlights. It was special. I got to play with a lot of people that I've played with like in previous years and different tiers over the years. People who won big before, people who you hear about on the podcast. So all those matchups were great. I know how much work that they all put into it. It started rough. My first matchup was really rough. I got destroyed. I only had like 33 games played compared to 49 with PJ. And I was wondering what I did wrong. Like, this is my first time doing an auction draft. And it was just the start of the season with the European games and things like that. So settled in after that. Key other things, I guess, would be like really holding on to certain players and waiting through their cold streaks. I think it's important and difficult to do. When I got to 12 wins, that was a key moment. I think like pretty often around 12 is whenever you make the playoffs. So I was pretty happy when I got to 12. Not always, but.
Well, did you remember any of those players that you were considering dropping that were cold out of the gate?
Let's see. There was Huberto at one point, and then he was really good, I think, in like January, February, maybe. But he was cold in December. Dylan Strom was another one who had a cold streak in there. Those would be two ones off the top of my head that I was thinking of dropping at certain points.
How about you, Alec? What was your, experiences throughout the season?
For me, it kind of started with the draft. It seemed like everything kind of went right in the draft. And there was, you know, I was always, after I picked, I was like, I hope I get this guy next. And he would happen to fall to me. Like, for example, like Werenski in the fifth round, which I think was a pretty big steal. Like, that was a huge part of my team for sure. And then, so the draft for one, and then just picking up the right guys at the right time. Like I picked up like Raquel and Monahan around the same time. And it was when it was sometime in October, they both had favorable schedules. So it just made sense to add them. And then, you know, they really exploded, and I kept them for the rest of the year. It's little things, you know, luck as well. All my guys, you know, I had pretty good luck with guys staying healthy as well. So those were definitely instrumental in my success this year.
I'm looking over your roster here, at least the final roster you had by the end of the season. And, you know, Werenski's obviously a huge win, you know, performing well above where he was being drafted, mostly because of the injury risk there. You know, he hasn't been playing a lot of games the last few seasons, but, you know, I'm not seeing anyone else on the roster that's like such a huge surprise, you know, that you would have drafted so late and got so many points from. It seems like just an all around solid team.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's some guys that fell to the wire as well relatively early, like Troy Terry. You know, I somehow got him in free agency, and, who else do I have in here? Nick Schmaltz, I think, was pretty instrumental as well. He ended up, when I picked him up, he started doing well. And I also made like a couple trades to preserve like roster space. Something that I was really focusing on was making sure I had two streaming slots every week. I know I certainly like a lot of people do this, but what I like to do in terms of streaming is pick up a skater that'll get three or four games, and then use three ads on goalies, goalie streams. That's sort of my go-to strategy. So, you know, after I picked up Monahan and Raquel, I find that, you know, those were my streaming spots. And now, you know, I have to free up some space. So, you know, I thinned out the roster and was able to pick up like Philip Forsberg from a trade when he was, you know, in the depths of his cold streak. And he promptly, you know, went nuclear after that. So that's another type of thing that I was going for there.
I had Forsberg myself this year and was happy when he finally seemed to turn the corner. You know, he's got a decent baseline of production from his, you know, shots and sometimes hits, but it was definitely tough from a points perspective for a while. I see you also have Elias Pettersson or Elias Pettersson. I always forget. I'm embarrassing myself here.
Yeah,
the pronunciation, but
I got Pettersson. Yeah, that was through a trade. It probably didn't work out in my favor, but you know, I traded for him. Right, there was one moment where he was getting hot, and right after I traded for him, I remember he went like five games without a point, and I was like, oh, I just completely screwed up. But you know, it was one of those situations where it's like I traded Timo Meier and Rupe Hintz for Pettersson. It was relatively early in the season. And you know, it's either I do this two for one and maybe lose a bit of value, or I'm just, you know, dropping a guy like Sean Monahan or Raquel, who I'm, you know, pretty eager to keep, you know. So that's sort of what went into that.
The one commonality I'm noticing is that both of you, and in fact me in the Kickuffle this year, all took Cale Makar. And I see that I drafted him with the 9th overall pick. It looks like, Alec, you got him 10th. And you took him in the auction draft, Ian.
Yeah. Almost by accident, actually.
Sorry?
Sort of on purpose, but one of those ones where you put in a bid and you're like, should I have done that?
Seems to have worked out. You also have, and I'm not sure if these were all ones you auction drafted or traded throughout the year, but you've got Nylander and Kucherov as well. So definitely a star-studded core.
Yeah.
Was that kind of your draft strategy to go with a sort of, you know, as they say, studs and duds approach?
Sort of. I don't know. Like, I don't think I was sticking directly to that. It was my first auction draft. I thought it was really neat. So I did some research beforehand to understand the format a little bit better. I still use things like Dauber projections customized to our league settings. But that doesn't give you a dollar value for the player. So I looked at some of the drafts from previous years to see kind of like the team makeup of the teams that were winning and like where those, just trying to get like a feel for like what players are worth. The budget was 260. And I was thinking of, I plan to allocate that in two different ways. There's a lot of opinions on auction drafting, but I did try to budget. I had a set budget for my forwards, my defense, my goalies, but I also wanted a, like a count of like $40 plus players and $30 to $40 players, 20s, and so on. And yeah, as the draft was unfolding, I felt like people were overpaying for players relative to what they were going for in previous drafts, like last year's auction draft. And then I realized that there was two extra teams. There was like an extra $500+ in the pool. So it was like apples to oranges, right? So the top players were actually going for more than they did in previous years. And I kind of picked up on that. Kucherov was like the last top five guy remaining. And so I bid for him, which what I thought was like an overpay, but I wanted to make sure I had a top five player. And yeah, ended up with Makar. he was someone that I thought in hindsight I could have done better with, perhaps. He used pretty much all my D budget. Maybe getting someone like Hughes and having more money for an additional forward or something like that. And also, I am that guy who wanted to have a Leaf because I like the team and they're always on TV every Saturday. So I wanted to get a Leaf, so I got Nylander as well. But yeah, it's kind of neat to look back and see like what everyone went for and how you could have constructed like a monster team. Whenever I was looking at this too, I noticed that all of my $2 plus players were still on my roster at the end of the year, which was kind of neat. I didn't think about that until after the season. I noticed that all the $1 players were rotated out at some point.
It's funny how, you know, after a certain point in the season, you don't really think about where you drafted them anymore. You're just thinking about what have they done in the last week, the last 2 weeks, the last month. I'm seeing one really good, purchase or auction win you have, and that's Macklin Celebrini for just $6. So that one certainly paid off.
Yeah, that was brought up during the draft too. That it was probably going to be one that paid off, and it was good because I didn't have like any money left at that point, and no one outbid me. I was lucky. The $6, I think.
A question I have, I guess, is at what point during the season, if at all, did either of you sort of change your strategy based on, how things were going? So, Alec, you knew for quite a while that you were up near the top of the fast track leaderboard. I'm not sure exactly how far along in the season you first got to the top, but you were definitely in contention for a while. And Ian, you were, on track to make playoffs. So at what point did your strategy sort of shift maybe from just matchup success in the regular season to playoffs or Alec, in your case, to actually winning the total points for in the fast track?
I'm struggling to remember exactly when as well, but I think it was, a couple months in, I noticed I was getting tagged a lot by the Kakuffle bot, who's, like most points over the last 14 days, over the last 30 days or whatever. So I was following that, and then I saw like I was within the top five of the leaderboard. So, pretty early on, I was like, oh, I might have a realistic chance at this. And I kind of had a feeling like my team was pretty strong, like from the get go. Quite early on, I was just, really focused on trying to win that fast track. But, it doesn't really change the strategy like week to week all that much, apart from if you're trying to optimize for the playoffs. But because, every week I'm just trying to get the most points possible. So, week to week, it didn't really affect my decision making all that much. But definitely later in the season, there's, I was thinking about making some trades, to trade away some playoff, some players with great playoff schedules, just to get some more points before the season ended. But, I figured I would try and ride it out with my current roster. But yeah, had I not been in contention for it, I definitely would have, made an effort to look to solidify up my playoff schedule.
Yeah, I find that, one of the things that's generally advantageous, if you can, is to try and use your ads in a week to set yourself up well for the next week, in terms of like performing well in matchups and setting yourself up to win more matchups. But, that can get you in the situation if it works out where, you come to Thursday or Friday in a week and you're already ahead by a good amount of points. So at that point, if you're only focused on matchups, that's when you start, dropping a player who plays Friday, Sunday to pick up someone who plays Monday, Wednesday the following week. But I'm guessing that that's not what you were doing. You were focusing on extracting every bit of value from the player, even if a matchup was already decided.
Yeah. No, I definitely wasn't wasting any ads. I'm especially like late in the season, I'm like way ahead of my opponent in a matchup. It doesn't matter. I'm still streaming a goalie on Sunday to get those extra points. So Honestly, as the season went on, I was caring, like, you know, a bit less and less about my direct matchup and just looking at the teams on the fast track in second and third and seeing, oh, who do they have running today? So I can root against those guys. But yeah.
Did you ever have any dialogue with some of those other teams? Did you message them on the Discord at all? Or
there was one guy, I'm trying to remember what his name was. I can't remember exactly, but he was in my ally chat. I can't remember. It was maybe a couple months before the season ended. He was asking me like, oh, like, I just noticed, you know, we're in the same ally chat, like, just wondering, what are your key contributors and stuff like that. And I took a look at his team and he had like Makar and Roransky as well. So we had pretty similar teams. So, that was quite funny.
And then, so Ian, on your side of things, you know, you were saying that 12th matchup was, you know, a point at which you felt pretty mm-hmm. good about your playoff chances.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm looking through your schedule here, it looks like that would have been, you know, maybe a month before the end of the regular season. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I was looking at like previous seasons and that number seemed to be pretty consistent. I know that there'd be outliers for sure who are like shaking their fists in the air right now, but, yeah, that was good. There wasn't really much for strategy changing throughout the year, just focusing on wins and kind of doing what you said, thinking like if you're in a good spot in your matchup, maybe making a move that helps the next one, staying patient with certain players when they're on their cold streaks or having bad schedules. At the end, I still tried to go for the bye week, though. I didn't change anything to try to like optimize for a playoff schedule. I went for the bye week. I came short, but it was all right. I had a few good pickups throughout the year that helped. That stuck with my team.
In terms of the during the playoff weeks themselves, who was the MVP for you? Who's your Conn Smythe winner?
It was like different for each matchup. Like one was Makar, one was Kucherov, but. I'm looking at their stats right now, and Morgan Geeky, such a crazy end to the season. So I don't know, maybe him. Which is kind of funny. He had like the last like 11 or 12 games, he didn't score only two of them, and one of them was a 5-point game. That's something.
Pretty good contributor, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was good.
It looks like your goalies did pretty well near the end of the season as well.
They were rough throughout the year too, and then they performed well at the end. Dustin Wolf was a midseason pickup. Someone had dropped him, and I was able to pick him up for my third goalie. Usually, like before that, I was going with two goalies and using that as a streamer spot for forwards or goalies. But I had three that I didn't want to drop any of them, so kind of. I guess that perspective changed a little bit.
Yeah, definitely getting some volume with Wolf and Sorokin and Ullmark as well. You know, I think both Calgary and Ottawa in that playoff hunt, you know, they were riding their starting goalies hard to make sure that they were going to win that race and or try to win the race in the case of Calgary.
Yeah.
Well, it's very impressive, both of you. Any other things you learned during the season or pieces of advice you'd have for other people trying to replicate your success?
Yeah. I mean, I think streaming super important. I really live by my two streaming slots, philosophy. But I mean, also something to just keep in mind is that like, you know, even if you had a bad year, like sometimes like it just doesn't break your way. Like for example, just to show the amount of luck involved, right? When the draft was completed, I actually like wasn't super happy initially with my like first couple picks. I really wanted to get Jack Hughes and Rasmus Dahlin as my top two, but ended up with Makar and Marner. So that obviously ended up working out really well for me. I mean beyond that. I felt like I benefit a lot from looking into underlying rate stats, stuff like shots per 60, scoring chances 4 per 60, Corsi 4 per 60, and some on-ice stats too. Those are really helpful for identifying breakout players.
Yeah, a lot of luck involved. Like, I don't know, roughly some ratio of like decision making with luck, with also paying attention, you know, for like which goalies are going to start and all that. But yeah, like the person who won my T2 division the previous year came second last in this one. So there's just so much luck. Like a few. So Kucherov was like my top pick, right? And almost like begrudgingly, I picked him in a way, because the last time I had Kucherov, he was injured for the whole year. It was that year where he came back for the playoffs. And that was the year that I got relegated down, because if you miss your top pick, then you can't make up for that with streaming. However things went this year doesn't affect how things are going to go next year.
Yeah, as I've said, you know, you have to, in order to be successful in a highly competitive league like this, you have to be lucky, you have to be really smart, and you also have to work really hard too. And that especially goes to the streaming and trying to identify breakout candidates, like you were saying, Alec. You know, there's so much work I think that can be done in the first month of the season, you know, to try and find the players who are going to be valuable throughout the year. And it's not always the players who score, you know, 3 goals in the first week. Sometimes it's the ones who didn't score, but those metrics are really, really looking good out the gate.
Yep.
Do you guys have any particular hopes or goals for this next year's season in Tier 1? You're going to be facing off against each other and a whole bunch of other highly competitive managers who won or placed highly in their divisions.
Yeah. I want to be hopefully competitive, put up a good fight. I've never done an auction draft before, so it's going to be a new challenge. I'm going to try and put in a lot of prep. I want to try and build my own projections this year. It's going to be very exciting. I'm very hyped for that.
There's rumors about the auction draft. I don't know. I hope it stays in some shape or form.
There's been a lot of debate on the Discord.
Oh, really?
Certainly some people, feel strongly either that they don't like it or that they do like it. And there's always debate back and forth. I'm not sure what the end result's going to be for this coming season. I personally think it's a great thing for the Tier 1, you know, to make Tier 1 special and different. And I think it makes for some good content when Brian and Elon do their episode, you know, retell or broadcasting what's happening live. But we will see.
Yeah, that was really cool. I was excited to join for that reason. You're sort of getting your draft, live commentary on your draft was neat.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your experience like first time auction draft?
It was fine. I ended up overspending on certain ways that I was planning to spend, but I was still like mostly happy with it in the end. I definitely need to, it was like a totally different way of drafting. It was really neat to be able to have kind of like more control over what you wanted for your team. Like one of the teams, they had McDavid and Dreisaitl on their team. Like you can't do that in another format. And they made the playoffs and then had bad luck because both of them were injured at the same time. That was really neat.
Yeah, I do think it is cool how you can really pick any players you want, any combination, any, you know, structure of value. You can get a few first rounders, or you can forgo them to get a whole bunch of third or fourth rounders. And
yeah, you can really build a unique team that you would never see in like a snake draft. I think that's really cool.
Well, personally, I hope the auction stays, and I hope that I can get up into Tier 1 to try it out sometime one of these years.
Yeah, I guess I understand. I don't know. It's probably like extra work to organize, right?
But so worth it.
It's got to be something special in this place if it goes away, but I hope it doesn't.
I guess we'll have to wait a few months to find out.
Yeah.
Any final words, guys? Thanks so much for coming on the show with me.
Thank you, Derek. And thanks, Alex. It's really awesome to meet the two of you. And next year will be a lot of fun. And I hope that I get my players are healthy and I can stick around T1 for another year or two.
Yeah, likewise. Nice to meet you both. And thanks, Derek, for having us. I really appreciate it. And excited to be your competitor next year. And I'll see you on the draft board.
Mm-hmm. We'll be looking forward to that. In the meantime, Ian and I can cheer on our Maple Leafs taking on, as of this recording, the Florida Panthers in the second round of the playoffs. We'll see how that goes. Thanks, guys, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye.
The NBA and NHL 82 game grinds are done. Now the real fun begins. The NBA and NHL playoffs are here, and it's time for all the high-stakes drama, clutch moments, and jaw-dropping plays. I can't wait. And if you're looking to make the playoffs even more exciting, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered as the official sports betting partner of the NBA. Try placing a bet on your favorite player's performance. Will they drop 30 points? 40? More? It's your call. Here's something special for first-timers. New DraftKings customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Make it a playoff run to remember with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ice.
Okay, we are here with the good old Ottawa boys, rebrand pending, but for this year at least, they are the champions of the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Dynasty League. So let's give a big warm welcome to Ian, Brett, and Saqib. Let's start it off with Saqib. How are you doing? How was your Dynasty experience this year?
Yeah, it was good. Some ups and downs, some disappointments, but really happy about pulling through in the Keeping Carlson Dynasty League.
How did this team form between the three of you?
That's a good question. I think it was me and Brett first were paired together, and then they were opening up more invites and asked if it was okay for Ian to join our team, and we were more than happy to have him.
Yeah, I've been in the league myself as well, and it's been really fun working with a partner. And I think, you know, the format allows for bigger groups as well. So definitely some opportunities for lots of people to get involved. For anyone who has not been following or is not familiar with the Dynasty format, we have 20 teams with full size rosters, both of pro eligible players or players playing in the NHL, as well as minors eligible players or prospects. We are playing in a categories format, 6 skater categories, 2 goalie categories. And we did a big draft last summer, an inaugural draft with 56 rounds, over 1,000 players, I guess, total between pro and prospect. So maybe we should start talking a little bit about that. How was the draft process? What strategizing did you guys do? Maybe Ian or Brett?
Yeah, maybe I'll go first there, Brent, if you don't mind. I think in terms of the draft, Saqib and I may have played a more active role than we did during the, I would say, week-to-week process during the season, just because Saqib and I had a little more experience in Dynasty, and Brett, who I would describe as probably the heart and soul of our squad, he was very eager. The draft was so deep, and I found that I expected the teams to be sharp. The draft was extremely sharp, so I found it got quite shallow very quickly. Our focus was, I think, on trying to identify players whose value was likely to increase or at least remain the same for, I would say, a 2 to 5 year period. We wanted to have a window, but with such a deep league, 20 teams, we weren't really sure, you know, how confident we were that if we were to say, hey, let's go win now, that we'd actually be in the top, you know, 4 or 5 teams. So I think the idea was, especially given that it was contracts, to look at it from kind of a value perspective, but not to overthink it either.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we did on our team was trying to assign a sort of present value to every player based on, you know, how, what their fantasy production is in our category settings, how old they are, what their current contract is, and, you know, using all that together to kind of, you know, build a list. But as you say, you know, it's not necessarily a good idea to take a whole bunch of valuable 35-year-olds if their value is not going to increase and you're going to be left with big holes on your team going forward.
I agree. And I think, Derek, the interesting thing about this kind of contracts league is that goaltenders, for example, we wanted to make sure that we, you know, chose the goaltenders that we liked because we knew we were going to probably have to pay up anyway. And in a 20-team league, we didn't want to end up with a Skinner or a Gibson. We didn't want that, you know, our goaltending solution to kind of be imposed on us. So we tried to, I think, identify kind of certain groups like forwards, generally high skill guys, guys like the Ahos, you know, the Stankovens, people we expect to play for a long time versus the Gudises, right? We ended up trading for Gudis later in the season, and it was a great trade. We knew we were already in the playoffs. He wasn't the type of player, you know, type of archetype that we wanted to invest in just because he plays so hard. He gets so banged up at the same time in season, super valuable.
Yeah, so let's go through maybe some of your top players that led you to this championship. I see your first round draft pick maybe didn't even play for you during the fantasy playoffs, and that was Kaprizov. What happened there?
Yeah, I went down with that injury midway through the season, and we were hoping for a gracious return come playoffs, but it didn't happen, unfortunately. So we were kind of a little stressed and weren't sure if we were going to make it through the first round, but luckily through all the deals we kind of made throughout the season gave us the depth we needed to prevail. I think goalies, as Ian mentioned, were kind of our strong point. We really focused on that in the draft. Had Sorokin, Allmark, got lucky with Lankinen. Hofer was good. I think through the playoffs, we swept all of the goaltending stats. And with our injuries, opened up roster spots, I think we just filled with guys we felt could have help in specific stats that we thought were going to be close based on who we were playing. Blocks was kind of the one we targeted a lot, picking up guys like Mata, Dumoulin, just anyone to help us push us through those kind of peripheral stats because we knew we weren't going to be able to dominate on every stat, but we felt we would be close on a lot of them. And you just need to get majority to win a matchup, and I think that's kind of how we won every single matchup that playoff run.
Yeah, interesting looking kind of at the draft board here. I see you did take Fox in the second round, but after that, looks like it was a while before you took any more D. And it seems like that aligns with what you're saying, you know, not investing in those, you know, sort of banger cats, so to speak, but trying to pick those up in season.
Yeah, it's kind of just a product of picking Kaprizov, Aho, Kairu with our first few picks. It's guys who can produce, they shoot, but not a lot of hits or blocks. Same thing with Fox. So we kind of decided from that point we'd prioritize the offensive stats and goaltending, of course, and then fill in hits and blocks as needed. I mean, hits was definitely that one category we knew we were never going to win, so we kind of punted that for the most part throughout the season.
You at one point, I think, I can't remember who approached who, but we had a chat during the season about the idea of a trade for a St. Louis trade between Rob Thomas and Jordan Kyrou. And we ended up not making that trade, but I think both players improved kind of after that point in the season. I know Thomas was really great for us after he returned from injury in the second half.
Yeah, I think I approached every single team about trades throughout the season. As Ian mentioned, I was kind of aggressive throughout the season. Obviously leaned on those guys through the draft with their expertise, but I kind of just talked to everybody. And yeah, we chatted about Thomas. I knew we were in a bit of a hole at the center position. We didn't have a lot of depth. We had lots of wingers, so we were looking to find an equivalent value center in exchange for that winger. But obviously weren't able to come to an agreement on that one.
That's okay. It worked out for you. You found a few other big trades to make, or partners to make trades with. Was it O'Reilly you picked up in one, I think, maybe sort of early in the trade season? Or maybe that was later. I'm looking at the board here. Yeah, that wasn't your first big trade of the midseason, but why don't you tell me a little bit about that process, I guess, you know, bolstering your lineup once you realized you were in playoff contention.
I'll give you just a heads up. We had a process for our trades. Brett would do all the work. He would reach out to everyone. He would prepare offers. He would connect with Saqib and I. Hey, what are you guys' thoughts on this? He would more or less figure out what our value of all our players for everyone on that other person's team. Like, seriously, he would do all the work, and he would be touching base with us constantly, touching base with the other teams. And more or less, when he would line up an offer, he would give it to Saqib and I. And what's interesting about the three-person, instead of having like a two-person, you know, two GMs, well, we have three. So it was kind of interesting because all three of us have almost different styles. And it worked out really nicely in terms of how we would say, yeah, I'm comfortable with, you know, say there are five trades, three of these five trades, we'd rank them in order, and then we would discuss them. But it was, a really democratic process. Whereas back in the day, I co-GM'd a team with one of my best buddies. You know, I'm from Cape Breton, he's from Newfoundland, like two good Islander boys. And what would happen was we would just almost defer to each other on each decision. We just take turns, and it didn't really work out well, but this worked out super well because there were just the three of us. Anyway, that was my thoughts, but I really, and Brett doing all the work was obviously nice too. But in terms of the process, I enjoyed the discussions. Like every time we go to Discord, I enjoyed it because the boys knew what they're talking about, and we were all pretty like fair with each other.
Yeah, I agree with Ian. It was a great process, and I've never co-GM before, and I think it was great just having the three of us where if two people kind of got to loggerheads, the third person would come in, kind of say their piece, and then kind of that would open up the discussion and we could get to a better understanding and agreement. I thought it was great. And I agree. Brett did so much work. It was amazing.
So in terms of your evaluation of, you know, future assets, young players, prospects, but also, you know, early round picks, let's say, versus, you know, players that you thought would fill a hole for this season or for a, you know, few seasons, you know, how did you, I guess, find that balance? Like, what did you use to determine if a trade was going to be worth it for you in the long term?
I would say there are probably a few considerations, guys. I think cost was certainly one. We were reluctant to take on new contracts unless we really believed in, you know, the market value of the contract. So we were trying to avoid taking on, you know, 5-year deals, 6-year deals, guys we didn't like. And those are often the guys that people were trying to get rid of, understandably. So I'd say that would be the number one factor for me, was just kind of the cost. And we were trying to kind of manage our risk. That would be the factor that jumps off the top for me. I can let the guys jump in on the others.
Yeah, I felt that we were, or at least for me, I was always looking for trade partners where we could find potentially nominal upgrades. We weren't going for home runs. We weren't going for Eichel or Kucherov, but we were going after guys we felt would be good depth. We already had our top end guys, Kaprizov, Aho. We just wanted to fill out that roster in the event anything happened, like a Kaprizov injury. At the same time, we didn't want to mortgage all of the future. So we knew our prospects that we felt would give us good value long term, considering the contracts we currently had on the books. So we didn't give up any of those guys. We gave up picks for the next year or this year's draft. I think we have like 3 fourths and a fifth. So not a whole lot to do this, this off season. But we were comfortable with that. We knew we had a team that could compete now and for the next 2 or 3 years. We have guys like Marchessault, Toffoli, who are getting older but still solid players, still on good contracts. So we were looking for more players like that. We got Teravainen, Garland, Raquel, all fit that same bill, still going to be able to produce for the next few seasons, still on contract, so it's easy to project. But at the same time, we didn't feel like we gave up too much on the future, besides obviously firsts and seconds next year.
Did you have just your own picks coming out of the draft, or did you make any trades during the inaugural draft that gave you extra picks for anyone in this upcoming 2025 draft?
I don't recall if we really were future heavy for picks during the draft. I know we made some trades. We gave up, I think, our first round or second round pick in the minors draft to grab JGP in the pro draft. But most of the inaugural draft was just trading up, trading back, depending if we liked a guy or if we felt we could fade and wait. Just always we're looking for opportunities to gain value depending where we were at in the draft.
And so you mentioned some of those players that you brought in during the season. I mentioned O'Reilly, Brent Burns. I haven't been following Burns in this past season, but was that a positive value trade in retrospect?
Yeah, we grabbed Burns late in the draft. We had cap space. We thought he could be a solid depth contributor, considering he's more of a shoot assist kind of guy. We weren't targeting peripherals. But yeah, as we approached the deadline, we needed to free up cap space to grab guys we needed. And we felt his value wasn't where it needed to be to compete for us. But we found a trade partner, someone who was looking to do well in the minors, I guess the portion of the playoffs where winning gets you closer to picking higher. So we just got a prospect in return, just something to help us for the future. Nothing crazy. But yeah, he was just kind of one of those older guys we grabbed in the draft because he was sitting around.
Yeah, I imagine when you're canvassing all the time, putting in all that effort, you're going to find opportunities where a low cost deal could be mutually beneficial for both sides, something like that. There were definitely a lot of teams, ours included, that were really trying to maximize our chances in the consolation bracket to get a higher draft pick. And I think you were around the end of the season fourth in the standings, so not a shoe-in, even perhaps a favorite in the playoffs, but we did have 2-week-long playoff matchups. So you guys had to win 6 weeks worth of playoffs, basically, three rounds, two weeks each. Was there any drama throughout that? Was there any, transactions used to maximize your games played during that stretch? How did the playoffs go?
Yeah, Brett was on top of that as well. Brett would figure out the max games within 3 hours of Monday morning and then give us options. I think that the two week playoff matchups helped us because our draft strategy really was, it was kind of like what Brett was saying, where we identified certain categories. We felt like we had like a 75-80% chance of winning like power play points, assists, blocks, right? I kind of have go-to, it reminds me of when I've been doing fantasy for a long time, like over 20 years. And fantasy basketball is the sport that I find has the most like sticky data. And in fantasy basketball, you really can't identify certain categories. So I'm looking for certain types of players. So it's like the centers who can shoot free throws and threes are rare. Defensemen who can get, shots on goal, blocks and power play points, they're kind of like the unicorns. So that's why we looked at like Fox, Dunn. We didn't get much out of Dunn this year, but I felt like that very kind of strategic approach to the categories helped us over the two-week period. And I think someone picked us the first week, and then because there were a bunch of upsets, we then had the ability to pick our next two opponents. And once again, Brett did a bunch of homework to prepare like a briefing on who our opponents were. And then we had this really good discussion about kind of like which categories to target. It was, yeah. So, and it worked out, guys. We won. It couldn't have worked out better. Obviously, but also like our process, I think, and I'm clearly a dork, our process was very solid.
Yeah. And the 2 week matchup really helped us with our goalie categories and just, it accentuated our strength in goaltending, because by the first week we were already like way ahead in a bunch of goalie cats, and we could pick and choose what our starts were, where the other team had to just play everyone that they had. And I think that was really beneficial. And I think that's how we basically swept all the goalie cats throughout the playoffs. And I think it was Dave that picked us in the first round. They were third seed and they picked us as the fourth seed because we were dealing with a bunch of injuries.
Yeah, I guess having Sorokin and Ullmark and, you know, playing in a playoff race, they were both playing a lot. I can't remember who else you said you had on the roster.
Lankinen and Hofer. So both, yeah. Both like relatively high volume for all four. And Ullmark went on quite the tear in the second half, which Brett wanted to take Ullmark, I think, in the first round. I'm exaggerating, but Brett, you definitely wanted to take him in the second and third round. We ended up getting him in the sixth, and Brett's a diehard Sens fan, and he described himself as a homer because I've called him a homer several times. I'm just like, Brett, come on, man. You're such a homer. And I'm a huge Leafs fan, but I almost avoid Leafs players because I'm aware of my own, and I think Sakeep's kind of the same way, and Brett is just all in. So Ullmark was our MVP, and it was all Brett because I wouldn't have picked him in a million years because I thought there was a lot of risk.
All in Sens fan, though, you had the chance in your first round to take Tim Stützle, and I guess you felt Kaprizov was just a little too enticing at that point.
Yeah, we had a good debate between a few players, Timmy being one of them. But yeah, even as a Sens fan, I knew it couldn't go Timmy over Kaprizov. That would have just been a little silly, at least for basing what we wanted to a similar team as.
Yeah, I like to talk about punting on a category like hits, because in a categories format like this, it's maybe the one category that can be overemphasized by, depending on how you're doing your spreadsheet math or how you're, you know, whatever rankings you're using, you know, oftentimes hits get maybe overrepresented. And if you're not careful, you end up drafting a team of all hitters and you can't win any of the other categories. So definitely an interesting strategy that seems to have paid off.
And guys who are good at hits get banged up. Like, that's the reality I find is, my favorite guys in real life, the Landeskogs, like Wendell Clark was my favorite player. Those guys break down and they're amazing in real life. I would rather someone who doesn't go throw any hits like a Phil Kessel any day over, you know, like a Wendell Clark in fantasy type thing, in dynasty, maybe not in redraft.
So any other pieces of advice for new dynasty players or people who are in a dynasty league and looking to improve going forward? You know, what maybe that we haven't mentioned do you think is key to your success or could be key to someone else's?
I'd say if you're someone who plays redraft or keeper and at the end of the season, you find yourself thinking, man, I really picked a great team. I wish I could keep it going. Like, I feel like I've had those experiences for I don't know how many years. And if you're somebody who feels like you put together good depth, I feel like Dynasty is it's more of a slow burn, but I think it's a better fit maybe for you than if you're in a three player keeper or a redraft. It's definitely for, I would say, the more patient, maybe more strategic person, which, you know, is not everybody. I enjoy it because, you can find value in the weirdest corners of, you know, the waiver wire prospects. Like, Brett found some fantastic guys on waivers, like Blake Montgomery, you know, I'd never heard of him, went to see the 67s play Ludden. He was phenomenal. We picked him up immediately. So I would say that if you like depth, if you enjoy kind of the depth, if you ever think to yourself, hey, this league is a little too shallow, and, you know, picking from a top 150 guy in the waiver wire versus a top 170 guy, if you find that's a little, I don't know, dull, I think Dynasty is something you might want to enjoy. And I would recommend try to do it with people you know. What's interesting is we don't know each other. Like, we live in Ottawa. This is the first time I've ever seen Brett. I've met Saqib a couple times at Keeping Carlson Hangs, but we're three strangers. I don't know if I would necessarily recommend this, despite the fact that, like, this has worked out super well. I think we may have beaten the odds. But that would be my advice is, like, love Dynasty. If you enjoy kind of a more slower burn, I would highly suggest it. And Fantrax is the way to go, too. Don't try to, you know, dabble it with Yahoo. It's not five max prospects. It's not, you want to be able to keep 10, 15, you know, prospects. And I think the best thing about Dynasty too is just you get to learn so much about the younger players and their skill sets and evaluating guys. And you tend to I just listen to really smart people talk about hockey all the time. Whereas in redraft, I didn't really feel like I ever had to do that. I had to do that homework.
I've definitely paid way more attention to prospects and the upcoming draft class this year than ever before. It was never something that I paid any attention to. And it may have disadvantaged me in particular when we got to the early rounds of our prospects draft, where there were a lot of names that people knew to take in those first two rounds that I just didn't have the same level of confidence in because I hadn't been hearing about them for years already.
There's a grace period, I would say. What would you say, Saqib? Like 2 years? For me, it took... I remember taking Rossi over Boldy in a startup, and I thought, I love Rossi. You know, I've watched him play with the 67s, and he's just a phenomenal player in real life. I think he could be amazing in fantasy. He's not quite there, whereas Boldy has more of a fantasy-friendly game. And my buddy, who had been doing Dynasty for a couple years before that, we've known each other for our whole lives, just kind of laughed. And said, yeah, Rossi's great, but, you know, I think Boldy's the guy here. And sure enough, you know, here we are. But it's part of the, I guess, you got to start somewhere. But I do find it to, yeah, I'm not going to talk about how much I like Dynasty anymore because I've already said it quite a few times.
Why don't you tell me how much you like your top prospect, the player you took in the first round of the prospect draft is Logan Stankoven. Is that right?
I love me some Logan Stankoven. We're really happy about the trade. We love Dallas. They're such a deep team. We're pretty excited to see what Stankoven can do over there, especially we have Aho. Carolina isn't nearly as deep, and, you know, he's a little guy. He's kind of like a right-hand shot. I'm from Nova Scotia. Not a huge fan of Brad Marchand, but he kind of reminds you of the Brad Marchand, where he's smaller, but he's tough. He can, you know, play, and he can do a little bit of everything. And he can fire the puck, but he's just kind of, you watch him play, and he's like, I love Logan Stankoven, but I do think Mason Lauri was, I think, our best, like, low-key pick. He turned into a really great season for us. I think he had 40 points, almost all assists, lots of blocks, shots. McAvoy was out, but we got him. I don't know if it was the sixth or seventh round, but those were, yeah. Love me some Stankoven.
Yeah, I think another consideration we had with when we picked Stankoven was he was on Dallas, and Dallas is typically really good with their contracts, especially with guys that break out. And unfortunately, he got traded, but he went to Carolina, which is another team that's equally as good with doling out contracts, or at least judicious on how they dole out their contracts. So that could benefit for us in a dynasty if Stankoven continues his trajectory.
Well, maybe he can help you compete and win another championship next year. Do you have any particular goals? I know, you know, winning again would be nice, but you know, what's your vision for the future in the next couple seasons?
Window's wide open. We talked about that window 2 to 5 years. I think we, you know, the Riley Gudas, you know, the other Raquel trades that Brett made single-handedly. Our window, I would say, is 3 to 5 years right now. We'll see what happens with, you know, Lankinen, now that he's signed with Vancouver. There's a lot of drama going on there. That could be a pretty good value contract. I think for us is we're probably interested in moving one of our goaltenders. You know, not like we're desperate to or anything, but there are quite a few teams out there in our league that are not exactly stacked in terms of goaltender depth. So that's something where we're open to it. But I think that's during the off season. I don't know, on my mind, that's probably a kind of a top priority, but yeah, let's see what the other guys think.
Any other thoughts, Brett, Saqib, any changes you need to make? Obviously, you don't really need to make a lot, but I imagine at some point, if your team's really good, you're going to be in cap trouble, although that may not apply to you guys specifically.
Yeah, we're pretty careful about cap throughout our deals, so we'll have to sit down and go over our roster top to bottom, see where we stand with the cap. I think we're pretty tight. We did all our deals with the mindset knowing we'd have to deal with it this year. So I don't think we're needing to trade anybody, just stay under the cap, but we are pretty close. So any deal we make going forward, we'll have to include some guys going back. But yeah, phones are ringing. I'm already reaching out to people already. If you've received a message, we'll keep it going. But if not, reach out. Always having to chat trade, as you have found out. So we'll keep it going.
Well, that's great, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It was great chatting with you. It'll be great competing with you again this coming season. Hopefully we can have our team improve a little bit and maybe meet you in the playoffs.
Just beware if you do have the choice of, you know, who you get to play. It hasn't gone well for, you know, for the one team that tried to do so beforehand. So.
Yes, fun little quirk, similar to the PWHL, where we get to pick our opponents, or the top seeds get to pick their opponents. So you always want to be careful about invoking some bad karma, I guess.
Gotta love it, though. It's a great wrinkle.
All right, well, thanks. Thanks, Saqib. Thanks, Brett. Thanks, Ian. Great chatting with you. And it was a great show. We will see you around.